Hello and welcome. You're listening to The Broadband Exchange, the podcast from your friends at Telecompetitor. I'm Ian Desher, Pivot's Director of Media and Story and Managing Editor of Telecompetitor. It's time to review this week's broadband news. Let's get into it. We'll start this week with a significant piece of legislation. The House passed the Farm Bill on Thursday of last week, and it included meaningful broadband funding provisions. The Farm Bill has long been an important vehicle for rural connectivity investment, channeling money through USDA programs like ReConnect. The inclusion of broadband provisions this cycle signals continued bipartisan support for rural connectivity investment, even as the broader federal funding landscape has grown more complicated. Should the Farm Bill and its appropriated funds become law, the following broadband programs will be funded: $350 million at cost of money plus $200 million through the Federal Financing Bank for rural broadband loans, $33.2 million for distance learning and telemedicine, $40 million for the ReConnect program, and $15 million for Community Connect. The Senate still needs to act before any of this becomes law, so we're not at the finish line yet, but the House vote is a meaningful step forward. On the state funding side, Colorado opened its application window for its Advanced Local Middle Mile program. The program targets middle mile infrastructure, which remains one of the most important pieces of rural broadband deployment. As you know, the absence or inadequacy of middle mile infrastructure often determines whether last mile providers can offer affordable service at all. Colorado's program is designed to address that gap, and providers and local entities now have an opportunity to apply through June 29th. Now to the FCC, which had another busy week, as they seem to every week these days. The Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals struck down the Biden-era digital discrimination rules, which the bipartisan infrastructure law charged the FCC with putting in place. Those rules were designed to prevent broadband providers from making deployment and investment decisions based on the income or demographic characteristics of a particular neighborhood or area. The concern initially was that providers were giving better service to wealthier communities and maybe underserving lower income areas, and the rules were intended to create an enforceable standard against that practice. The court, though, this week found that the FCC had exceeded its statutory authority and threw the rules out entirely. This is a significant ruling with some real implications. Digital discrimination has been documented and debated for years, and the rules represented a serious federal-level attempt to address it. With the Eighth Circuit's decision, those protections are now gone, and there's no clear path to restoring them under the current FCC priorities. Speaking of digital equity, the FCC also introduced a new E-rate portal this week. The agency said the portal is aimed at reducing fraud and simplifying access for schools and libraries that participate in the E-rate program, which helps connect educational institutions to affordable broadband and technology. E-rate is one of the FCC's most established and widely used programs, but it's also been vulnerable to fraud, and the application process has drawn criticism for its complexity, particularly from smaller schools and libraries that lack dedicated staff to manage the filings. A more secure and streamlined portal is intended to address both of these concerns, though the response has been mixed so far. The mobile broadband market had a busy week as well, with multiple providers introducing new offers, so let's talk about those. Midco went live with Midco Mobile, launching with a $15 per month plan. They've been planning this service since last year and originally said that it was going to launch by the end of 2025, so they're only a few months late. For a regional provider operating across the Midwest, it's an aggressively priced entry at $15 per month, and it fits squarely into the trend of cable and regional operators using mobile pricing to deepen customer relationships and compete on price against national carriers. Last week, we talked about Comcast's updated mobile pricing strategy, and Midco's launch reinforces that smaller providers are just as willing to lead with low prices to gain wireless footing. Verizon's Visible brand expanded into home internet this week. Visible, which is Verizon's value tier wireless offering that they call a digital first plan, has primarily been a mobile-focused brand so far, so the move into home broadband is notable. Fixed wireless home internet has become a major growth category for wireless carriers, and Visible's entry suggests that Verizon wants the brand to compete in the converged home and mobile market. How the service is priced and packaged will matter a great deal to whether it gains real traction, but the strategic direction is clear. As you've probably seen in your areas, Verizon is claiming as much of the home broadband market as it possibly can. Spectrum Mobile introduced a second line feature this week that lets customers run two separate lines on a single smartphone. It's a practical way to keep work and personal communications separate without carrying two different devices. It's a useful product upgrade that also serves a clear strategic purpose. The more deeply customers rely on Spectrum Mobile for their daily communications, of course, the stickier that relationship becomes. And Comcast's Xfinity topped OpenSignal's first U.S. convergence report, which was a new analysis from OpenSignal that evaluated how well providers perform across both home broadband and mobile services. Convergence has become central to many operators' competitive strategy, as we've talked about in the last few weeks, and an independent endorsement from OpenSignal gives Comcast a meaningful data point to use in the market. Turning to satellite broadband, we had an interview with Contrivian recently about their Constellation product, which the company said could deliver terrestrial-like redundancy to low-Earth orbit satellite connections. They are aiming for reliability and failover performance comparable to fiber or fixed wireless. I was interested to speak with them because satellite internet is still relatively new, so it's interesting to see that Contrivian is already recognizing, and in fact I would say counting on, the many challenges that LEO connections can face and trying to proactively figure out ways to combine Amazon LEO and Starlink signals into a single reliable connection. Also on the satellite front, Nokia and the Rural Wireless Association hosted a webinar on using satellite as a complement to rural wireless networks rather than a replacement for them. That framing matters. For many rural wireless providers, the question is not whether to compete with satellite, but how to incorporate it into a broader service portfolio. Nokia's conversation with the RWA pointed toward a model where satellite fills the coverage gaps that towers can't economically address, a cooperative arrangement rather than a zero-sum competition. That was a possibility Contrivian also mentioned to me, saying that they could imagine partnerships with broadband providers that want to use satellite as a backup option for their customers, like a generator for emergency power. Moving on, the Fiber Broadband Association published a piece this week arguing that fiber deserves recognition as the fourth pillar of AI, alongside compute, data, and energy. The argument is that as artificial intelligence applications scale, their demands on network infrastructure become enormous, and fiber is the physical layer that makes it all possible at the speeds and latency levels AI workloads require. It's smart framing from the FBA, linking fiber investment, including in rural and underserved areas, to a technology story, namely AI, that is commanding attention from policymakers and investors in a way that broadband advocacy on its own often cannot. Speaking of fiber, SCTE launched two new fiber workforce training courses this week. The workforce gap in broadband construction has been a concern for years, and SCTE has been consistently active in trying to address it. Fiber deployment is limited not by just funding and permitting, of course, but by the availability of qualified workers to build the networks. Many of you who are listening to this have probably felt that pain at one point or another. These additions to SCTE's training catalog won't close the gap on their own, but growing the pipeline of trained fiber technicians is foundational work for the industry to meet the deployment commitments it has made. SCTE introduced two new course series that they're calling micro-credentials, one for fiber optic cable blowing and one for proactive network maintenance. We'll close with something a little different. Telecompetitor's editor-at-large Joan Ingebretson was at large in Minnesota last week and shared her experience being with the people driving broadband expansion in that state. Joan's article described them as burning souls, the co-op leaders, community organizers, and local officials who refused to accept that rural residents should go without reliable broadband. Ubiquitous broadband was all the talk at the event that Joan attended, which was hosted by Clearfield. Minnesota is one of the many states that are highly active in rural broadband deployment over the past decade or so, and Joan's piece captures some of the human energy behind that progress. If you have a few minutes, it's worth a read. Thank you for listening to the Broadband Exchange. You can read all the articles we mentioned today at telecompetitor.com. Feel free to drop us a line while you're there. Thanks again for joining us, and we'll see you next time.